It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm. New day, but more bad news in Berea. Joel Bitonio out for an extended period of time with a foot injury. In fact, here's a list of the guys not practicing during the portion of today's practice open to the media. Joe Thomas getting his Veterans Day off. Joel Bitonio foot. Corey Coleman remains out with his hand. Randall Telfer and Seth DeValve, both the tight ends, are out. And Xavier Cooper remains out as well. Some other notes is that Terrell Pryor, for the first time all season, is taking quarterback drill reps this week. So you've got McCown and Kessler, both of whom have thrown and look pretty good according to reports. Kevin Hogan, who wears number 8 now, and Terrell Pryor also taking some quarterback reps for this team headed into this game.
It's kind of just what I'm saying. And, I mean, I know you have to be ready for anything, but ultimately we've got four guys splitting, 75 reps they're going to get between today, tomorrow, and Friday. So we're a little the way in. I know we have to be prepared. I believe it. But we're a little way in on where we're supposed to be when it comes to getting ready for the Tennessee Titans. We're not all the way in one guy.
No, we're not.
And maybe that changes tomorrow. Maybe based on what we see throughout those divvied up reps on Wednesday, I'm not saying you chalk today up for a loss, but you don't take the momentous step that you do on first and second down that you normally do when you know who's going to start for you on a Wednesday.
Man, and Brown Dog Pound tonight, of course, want to remind you, the Cleveland Browns preview show on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network at 7 o'clock. Ken Carmen along with Matt Wilhelm filling in for Gerard Sherry tonight. Tomorrow night at 7 on radio, it's the Hugh Jackson Show, myself and Ken Carmen. And tomorrow at 7 o'clock on TV, it is the Hugh Jackson Show with myself, Hugh Jackson. You'll be talking with Connor Hamlet. Dustin Fox sits down with DeMario Davis, and we break down on the All-22 film, The Touchdown from Cody Kessler to Andrew Hawkins. That's all coming up tomorrow here or tonight and tomorrow night, all along the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network and News Channel 5. Got a question that I want you to answer before we go do a little after further review. Jason from Cary, North Carolina, asks, can you please explain peeking in the backfield and how that hurts the Browns? So what were we referring to on a couple of those big plays?
So what we're referring to is in certain situations in a football game, and even specifically on this weekend, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but I'll say myself, I'm guarding Rob Gronkowski in a man-to-man where he's either flexed out or he's attached as the end man on the line of scrimmage, okay? I'm an inside linebacker. I have inside technique on him, okay? He releases, okay? And the offensive linemen still come out with low hats, and Tom Brady flashes that football out to LeGarrette Blount as if it's like an inside or outside zone play. It creates a little bit of doubt in my mind. So I step up, I put my eyes on my work in Rob Gronkowski, but that doubt and the flash of that football takes my eyes back inside, and Rob Gronkowski, being the player that he is, gets into a winning spot in his route, to the point where now I can't be physical with him. I have to get my eyes back on my work late, and then I'm in chase mode on one of the best tight ends in the game. That's my point. So they create a little bit of doubt. The same way that you see a guy stutter his feet, or the same way that you see a guy, kind of like collision a guy, but you just want to sneak your head back at the quarterback because, and again, I continue to talk about it because I'm now coaching at, two tiers down from where we're at. It's the eye discipline that I want to teach right now is keep your eyes on your work, because when you peek, just because the quarterback has the ball doesn't mean I have to have my eyes on the quarterback.
Right.
My eyes need to get back on my work, and I need to focus on my job, my 1/11th, which is guarding Rob Gronkowski in this. If they run the football, it is not my place to fit and make the play. There is someone who has that running back in coverage. There is a defensive lineman stunting, whatever it might is. So it's basically when you're in coverage on someone and you peek at the quarterback and let your work get into an advantageous situation in you in coverage.
Yeah, and the other example would be when you're playing safety and your responsibility is the deep ball and they show that play action fake and you're just watching the quarterback and step up, all of a sudden somebody is running right by you, and that's what happened on the Martellus Bennett bomb with Ibrahim Campbell. It's what also happened on the Kevin Hogan bomb with Ibrahim Campbell.
Correct.
Took a couple steps in, bought the run fake, was looking in the backfield instead of watching what was happening
right,
around
and
him.
There and guys, there are guys, and that's why guys like Josh Norman, guys like Richard Sherman play so well because they get so good playing in zone because zone is a vision, you know, on both its feeling receiver and feeling the and understanding the route as well as having vision on the quarterback to be able to make a break on the football. Whereas when you're in man-to-man, it's like, this is my guy. Boom, there it is. You can't peek. You can't look around. You can't peek in the backfield because you'd be surprised. And that's the same thing. Same point is, when you take a peek, that guy's still running full speed and your eyes are in the backfield.
And as they say, if you're even, they're leaving.
See ya.
See ya, bye. John Porter says, what's going on with the Princeton tight end? Haven't heard much. Devolve can't get on the field. Couldn't get on the field throughout training camp. Couldn't get on the field at the beginning of the season. Came back. Now he's off the field again. That was one of the knocks on him. That was one of the reasons that some people thought he would end up going undrafted despite his immense physical gifts is that he just can't get healthy. And so far, that has been the case with him going in the National Football League with the Browns, and he is once again not healthy, and he missed practice today per all reports. Let's go now, bring in our producer, Mr. Matt Fontana, for a little after further review.
After further review.
Gentlemen, we kick it off with, if you were the Bears and head coach John Fox, would you start Brian Hoyer the rest of the way, or would you start Jay Cutler when he gets back?
Well, I think you start Jay Cutler. I mean, he's the guy that you've paid, you know, over $120-some million to, and you're paying, you know, on the hook for $17 to $20 million this year. And I think you have to have faith in the guy that you thought he was going to be, that he can regain that status. Because Brian Hoyer is a backup in the NFL.
I think the ceiling is higher with Jay Cutler. You try to get there. Obviously, he is struggling, and Brian Hoyer is doing a nice job the last couple of weeks, but yeah, I would say that you play the guy that you think is going to be the franchise, and that's Jay Cutler, although neither one of those guys is likely to be in Chicago after this season.
After further review.
What is the worst division in football?
The worst division in football would have to be, at least I'll go with both Souths. So I'm going to go with two. I'm going to go with the AFC South and the NFC South. The Panthers are 1-4. I believe the Buccaneers are 2-3. I want to say the Saints have...
Saints are 1-3.
1-3 as well.
But they do have the Falcons who are 4-1.
They do. That's fine. Okay, but whatever.
The other South, Jacksonville 1-3, Indy 2-3, 2-3 for Tennessee, and 3-2 for Houston.
Correct. So I would say, okay, so Houston is the bottom from the division standpoint, and I'd say the NFC South is just above them.
I'm going to go with the AFC South. Yeah, the Texans don't impress me.
Brock Osweiler.
He's terrible. So
he's not good.
Never wanted him here, and he is not here, thank goodness. But I'd say it's interesting. The AFC West has some three good teams, and the Chargers have been leading for most of their games. They just don't do a good job. The AFC South, I think there's not a single contender there. The AFC North this year, quite frankly, I think is a pretty weak division. You've got the Browns, you've got the Bengals, who are not as good this year.
2-3, right?
They're 2-3. And the Ravens, who are a very bad 3-2.
You're right.
But the Steelers are a legit team. In the NFC, in the East, I think, you know, three, that's a very good division. The NFC North, you've got the Vikes and the Packers, Lions, Bears, South, and then the West. Is the West that good? Are the Cardinals good this year?
No. I mean,
and the Rams aren't really
good. They can be good. I think the Rams are fluky.
And the Niners are not good.
The Rams are fluky. I think the Cardinals will get it together and probably get darn close to being double-digit wins.
The AFC South is the only team that does not have a legitimate contender amongst in its division.
Right. Which is about where they were last year, as you said, with J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
They were a team that wins a bad division, gets in the playoffs, and loses.
And now they don't even have J.J. Watt this time around.
After further review.
All right, guys. Washington and Buffalo, which team are you buying and which team are you selling through 5 weeks?
I'm buying Buffalo, the Buffalo Bills brand of playing football. And I think for the first time in a long time, actually, I'll say the first time as the Buffalo Bills head coach, Rex Ryan has the Buffalo Bills looking like the New York Jets in that division. Running the football, playing great defense. You know, they've got the league's leader in sacks. They've got the league's leading tackler, Shady McCoy, looked this past weekend like he's still in his prime. They're not asking Tyrod Taylor to do a whole lot.
And they're running the ball. Shady McCoy, who's having a phenomenal season. Yeah, they're playing old school Jets football, and they're doing it very effectively, getting the quarterback, making tackles. Their corners, Darby, Nickell Roby, and Stephon Gilmore, all playing good football for the Bills. They're for real. I saw the Redskins up close. They are not for real. That is not a
and
great
I think
football
even
for, team.
I mean, in one of the one of their losses, who did the Bills lose to in primetime? Who was that? In the color rush unis.
Jets.
The Jets, yes. They got boat raced by the Jets in a shootout.
And they fired their offense coordinator, and since then they've been better on offense.
Correct.
And amazingly, they've been a lot better on defense.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
After further review.
Final one, guys, a little bit of fact or fiction here. That's what I should have hit. Dak Prescott is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL right
fiction.
Now. Whoa.
Yeah, no, that's not true.
Come on.
He's playing very well if you watch him. He's not being asked to do a lot. They've got that unbelievable offensive line. He's handing the football off. They're running it well. He is making big throws, and he does look very, very good. But I'm not ready to put him in the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL at this time. But he's playing certainly in the top 20 right now, that's for sure. Playing better than I think anybody expected, even people down in Dallas. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll dip into the mailbag. We'll take your calls, 216-578-0850. Andrew Gribble at 2:30 coming up here on CBD.
Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm with you here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And Dog Pound, you can gear up for the 2016 Cleveland Browns season with new apparel from the Pro Shop at First Energy Stadium. They just started putting out the Salute to Service gear, which is awesome looking stuff. The hoodie, very sharp. You can get that at the Pro Shop. Hats, T-shirts, jackets, custom jerseys, and more. Season ticket members, remember to swipe your membership card to receive your exclusive discount and a chance to win great prizes. The Pro Shop's open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day, or call 440-824-3427 for more information. Let's bring in our producer once again, Matt Fontana, and let's go into the mailbag.
Let's do it. You guys can tweet at Browns underscore daily on Twitter, but use that hashtag AskCBD, and that's exactly what Aaron did. He said, guys, what, if anything, does the quarterback contribute to choosing run plays in Hughes' scheme? Can they make that call at the line to hand off, keep it, do whatever they need to in the run game?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely can make the decision, but I think you want to Hugh Jackson's the play caller for a reason, and I think there's only a few instances in a football game for Cody Kessler as a young quarterback where he probably has the opportunity where it's very clear for him to flip a play or change a play from a run to a pass. But as you get up there in years, as we see Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers, and the control that they have of the entirety of the offense and the trust of their head coach, offense coordinator, play caller to have the freedom to do pretty much whatever they want based on what they see.
We continue on. Again, you can tweet at Browns underscore daily, and you can use that hashtag AskCBD. This one comes from Rob. He says, with Betonio out, what do you guys expect the offensive line combination to be?
I think it's going to go like this from left to right. And again, we don't know for sure, but these are the ways that it could go. Joe Thomas, Greco at left guard, Irving at center, Alvin Bailey at right guard, Austin Pastor at right tackle. Greco had been a left guard before the Browns drafted Joel Bitonio. Or it could go Thomas, Cooper, if they decide to bring him into the lineup at left guard. Center would be Cam Irving, right guard, John Greco. I think your combination, you're going to have between the guards, you're going to have two of the three. Greco, Cooper, and Alvin Bailey. Your tackles are going to be Thomas and Pastor, and your center is going to be Cam Irving.
This one's from John. I know we kind of talked about this last week as well, but he just wanted an update on. He didn't know his name. He just said the Princeton tight end, but I'll fill you in here, John. That'd be Seth the Valve. Has there been any news on his injury?
Fontana, I happened to read that question last segment and answered it. Nonetheless, the answer is injuries. That's why it was not. That's why people thought he'd be undrafted. Wasn't able to get on the field in training camp all that much early in the season. Finally got healthy and then immediately got hurt again. So the big story for me with Seth the Valve is just an inability to get on the field and stay there.
I wonder if he asked this one. This one's Iron Will.
No, he did not.
Okay,
you're good. Does
Hugh have a bigger playbook available to him when he's got McCown in there over Kessler due to arm strength and experience?
I would probably say maybe not due to arm strength, although he might be more likely to dial up the big one. But I do think certainly due to experience. There are just more concepts and things that he can throw at him, I would imagine.
For sure.
This one's from Josh. He said, guys, where do you think Kessler ranks as far as the quarterbacks actually drafted by the Browns? He looks pretty good to me.
I am so pleased with Cody Kessler. Do I think you can just say right now, okay, we're done, this guy's got what it takes? Absolutely not. But am I pleased with Cody Kessler? You better believe I am.
You know what? Can you grab something for me, Nathan, right now? Grab me the Andy Dalton stats.
From what his
just his career stats on where he started. Was he a starter right out of the gates?
Andy Dalton?
Yes.
I believe so.
I think he was as well. And I just want to understand some of the struggles that Andy Dalton kind of had and through multiple quarterback coaches and play callers to get to where he is right now.
Okay, Andy Dalton as a rookie, okay, 58% completion percentage, 6.6 yards per attempt, 20 touchdowns, 13 interceptions.
Okay, as a rookie.
3,398 yards.
Yep. Okay.
His completion percentage never was below 60 again. His yards per attempt have increased basically every year and have been over 8 the last 2 years. Touchdown interception ratio wasn't much better. The only year it was significantly better was 2015 when it was 25-7. So, but basically around between the last 4 years, he's been about 66% completions.
Okay.
He's been about 7.5 yards per attempt and obviously more touchdowns than interceptions. But as a rookie, again, 6.6 yards per attempt, 58% completions, 20 touchdowns, 13 interceptions.
And I'm really not going anywhere particular with that, but I know that so many people can, compare the skill set of Andy Dalton, the arm strength, the ability to beat you, with his ability to read a defense.
Cody Kessler, limited sample set, obviously. 67% completions, 6.5 yards per attempt, which is right where Dalton was as a rookie, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. So there are some similarities.
Got it. Any more mailbag?
Sure. This one just came in from Ken, actually. Hashtag AskCB. Do you guys think RG3 will ever play another snap for the Browns?
I say yes.
I don't know.
I'll say yes.
Okay.
Just yes.
Just yes like that?
Yes.
See, to me, it's a matter of if Cody Kessler continues to play at a level where he's keeping you competitive, there's no reason to play RG3.
Because right. Based on the fact that we were going to draft
but if somebody's going to get next hurt, year? If somebody's – if I think it's possible. Again, I don't know that it's likely per se.
Okay.
We will see. When we come back, we're going to dip inside the mind of Sir Andrew Gribble. We missed Tuesdays with Gribbs. What's better than that? Wednesdays with Gribbs. It's coming up next.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Oh, welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, joined by Sir Andrew Gribble. What's up, Gribbs?
Just another week.
Another week, another injury. Joel Batonio, what kind of an impact is that going to have?
I think it's a significant one, and it's one of the most significant you could probably say up until this point of the season. And I know we've talked a lot about the quarterback injuries, and that's had a huge effect, but this is someone that's playing great football and probably I don't know if I'm overstating that he was on his way to being in Pro Bowl consideration probably for this season. He might not have gotten that recognition because of the team's record, but he is playing at a high level. I think Bill Belichick referred to the Browns' left side of the offensive line as one of the best he'd probably see all the rest of the season. That was the one area of stability basically on this entire roster was that left side of the offensive line.
Yep.
One of the main reasons why you've been running the ball so well is Joel Batonio pulling and providing some big holes. It's a big loss, and you're going to need Alvin Bailey to step up and likely fill that void, or maybe it's Spencer Durango that gets an opportunity as well.
Sure. So, and we've kind of addressed it a little bit, and given our takes, but what specific limitations do you think it puts on our offense, or how do things change now that Joel Batonio's out?
I mean, I don't know if it changes much, but I think this has been your strength all season is a power running game. You've seen these big holes coming up through the middle of the offensive line. That's where they've gotten their biggest gains. Crow's 85-yard run against Baltimore was a great example of that. you just need a guy like Alvin Bailey to step up and fill the shoes as much as possible. And that's hard to do with a player that's ascending like Joel Bitonio. I think that's another thing that's unfortunate. I mean, this is his third year, kind of that big jump forward year. He had a couple injuries last year that were tough luck situations. So you just hate it for him, and you hope he's not going to be out for that long going forward.
When you look at, you know, and obviously Bitonio, they've been pulling him, they've been utilizing him. Do you think does Greco go to left guard? Does Bailey stay at right guard? Does Jonathan Cooper, who they signed, are they expecting him to play this week? What do you think happens on the interior of this line?
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine it just depends on how versatile Bailey can be right away, because I don't think we've ever seen him at left guard in practice or any kind of situation like that. We know how versatile Greco can be, so I wouldn't completely rule out that situation, but I would imagine you just go one for one instead of putting two guys in new spots instead of one. I would think you coach Bailey up, get him ready for left guard. That would be my first inkling, but it could obviously be different.
But see, some of the limitations that I thought, and that's why I kind of asked the question, would be, I would say Greco would be the better athlete
right
between the two, which would play into the favor of him going to left guard because of how much we run to the right and have that guard, Joel Bitonio in that case, pulling around to that right side and having the maulers, Austin Pastore and Alvin Bailey, getting those down blocks, opening the seams so that puller can get up through and Crow then follows behind.
Yeah, certainly possible. And I guess Greco is a guy that can handle it. I mean,
sure.
I think mentally he's moved back and forth from center to right guard, has played pretty well doing that. So certainly not out of the realm of possibilities, but it's certainly – I don't know what line combination that the Browns are on so far this season, but this is going to be yet another different one because of all the shakeup.
And were you out for the warm-ups of practice?
I wasn't. No, I was still.
Oh, you
was
weren't. Okay, because my next question was just, and Nathan said that, you know, all the quarterbacks were throwing, Terrell Pryor was taking reps at quarterback. But what is your best estimation on what's going to play out on Sunday and who steps out on the football field first for the Cleveland Browns?
I think when you look at the kind of injuries that both Kessler and McCown are dealing with, I think my instinct would lean toward your likelier guy to be back would probably be Kessler, because it seems like the way he's described it, it's not going to be – I don't think it's going to be very fun for him on the field
right
on Sunday. It's a management thing. It's, you know, it hurts when he moves, and obviously you have to move when you throw and things like that. So it's going to be something he's going to have to play through. But I think he's going to get a good feel for it Wednesday or Thursday. But I think with McCown – you'd probably like to get him out in practice for multiple weeks before
right
you have to bring him back. But, you know, we all know the competitor that McCown is. I think he's going to be mentally probably ready to go. But I think you probably look at Kessler. But, again, things can change. How many injuries have the Browns had at practice throughout this season?
Too
things
many
can change from Wednesday to Friday. So, you know, I my thought on Wednesday could be completely different on Friday based on what we hear from players and coach throughout the week.
Do you think when you go against this Tennessee team, all the issues we've had stopping the tight ends, they've got a great one in Delanie Walker, what can the Browns do to be better against that position? Because it's a week after week after week thing. Started with Dennis Pitta. Zach Ertz had a couple big catches in week one, but he got hurt. Pitta victimized him over 100. Cameron got knocked out early against the Dolphins, and then Jordan Reed, we know, had the huge game. Martellus had the huge game. Gronk had a huge game last week as well.
Yeah, I think the way Coach said on Monday, though, it sounds like guys just got to be better in these one-on-one matchups, but maybe you adjust schematically because Tennessee probably has maybe the least threatening wide receiving core you're going to see all season based
yes
on what they've been able to do. So maybe in this game you can make some adjustments where you couldn't the previous week, because New England can hurt you in so many different ways.
But that's not a great receiving core either, to be perfectly honest, in New England.
They're tricky, though, and they can give you some problems. I mean, Edelman and Hogan and Amendola, they roll in a lot of different guys. I think it's been well documented that Tennessee is struggling with speed on the outside and just doesn't really have that number one guy. I mean, their number one guy was Dorial Green-Beckham, and they had to get rid of him because it wasn't really working out there. So, I mean, my concern for this game defensively is more so focused on the run defense, because up until this point, I don't think the Browns have faced a great rushing offense. I could be wrong, but you've had different, you know, a lot of by committee type teams, like the Dolphins were rolling in four different guys. The Eagles had a bunch
of different
guys.
The Ravens had Forsett and West.
And the Patriots were clearly going pass first. So this is a Tennessee team that loves running the ball, loves milking the clock, and has two really good running backs in DeMarco Murray, Derrick Henry. I mean, Murray is arguably – in the running for comeback player of the year this year for what he's done after a tough year in Philadelphia. So this is really the first big running test for the Browns. And the Browns have been good against the run, but in the Washington game when they ran out of gas, Matt Jones had ended up with a big game. So you want this is a four-quarter running effort against a pretty solid Tennessee.
Yeah, and it was a late rushing touchdown that ultimately undid them against the Miami Dolphins. And yes, they are going to pound him with DeMarco Murray's playing great and Derrick Henry as well. And what does a good running offense set up? Play action. The Browns, brutal against play action so far this season. I don't think this is a very easy matchup for the Browns defense.
I mean, no, I think Tennessee is a very much improved team. And I think if you go and look, if you follow, it's if you look at the win-loss record, you're probably thinking, oh, it's the same old Titans team. They've gotten a couple wins here and there but aren't doing well. But they've really, like the Browns up until last week, they've hung in every game they've been in. They've kept their games low scoring because they're controlling the clock. I think they arguably gave the Vikings, who are undefeated now, their hardest test of the season.
Yeah.
That week one when they were still using Sean Hill, and the Vikings just needed a bunch of defensive touchdowns to get back in that game. So Tennessee, I think, is much improved on both sides of the ball, and I think that they've just had a major injection of picks because obviously they traded the first-round pick. They got a bunch of players, but that's helped their depth, and they've had young players really develop and get better on both sides of the ball. So they're a few wide receivers away, I think, in a few years of Mariota developing from being a really good overall football team. But they've taken a big step from last year.
Terrell Pryor, second in targets only to Gary Barnidge, who had a pretty decent week. Five receptions, 76 yards, couple drops. What other playmaker besides Gary Barnidge, Terrell Pryor, do you think needs to really step up or is most viable to step up to allow us to continue to push the football down the field in case a Titans defense who's been playing very well does stop our run?
Yeah, well, I look for a couple guys. I think you probably want some more out of Ricardo Lewis, who's been out there a lot with Corey Coleman still on the sidelines. And I think I'm waiting for that kind of that Duke Johnson breakout game.
Yeah.
Where you can get him really involved in the passing game. I think when we saw it a couple weeks ago where both him and Crow were running at a high level, but we really haven't seen him used a ton in the passing game. I think he got a bunch of receptions at the end of the Redskins game, but that was kind of near the end of the fourth quarter. I want to see him involved early and often in that passing game because I think he can really help out a quarterback that maybe is dealing with an issue that's going to help prevent him from throwing it even longer than
sure.
He's accustomed to. So he's someone that – if your running game is struggling and not going as well as it happened a couple weeks ago, you throw those passes that are basically running plays and get
long handoffs
like that. So I think those are a couple guys I'd look for.
You need to get something going offensively because it's going to be tough up front with Arakpo, 6 sacks on the season. Jarrell Casey playing very well for this Tennessee Titans team also. And let me just ask you, we don't know where Josh McCown is. If he's, we know he's able to practice, but nobody said he was cleared to play in a game. Cody Kessler's a little bit banged up. Hogan is up. I mean, what are the chances we actually see Hogan this Sunday?
I would still think, and I think you would hope it's unlikely at this point just because the guy hasn't played in an NFL game yet, but I would think he's probably you're going to get to the point where he'll probably be in the backup situation. And the feelings we had week two, where we were after what we saw from Kessler in the preseason, and in week two when you had McCown, you're like, oh man, Cody Kessler is one snap away. So I think it could get to a point where you have Kevin Hogan one snap away. I think that's clearly a possibility, but he's had a few weeks in the system, familiar with Pep Hamilton. You hope he could respond in that situation if it happens, but I think in a perfect world, you don't hope it happens this soon in the season.
Sure. Any news on Corey Coleman? We're now almost 4 weeks from his injury against the Baltimore Ravens.
It's getting kind of close. I haven't heard anything updated lately, but we're getting in that window where it could
right.
be the time where he's maybe getting back into practice. But he's another person you'd expect. Get him on practice field for 1 week, probably not playing the game that week, and
right.
then the following week you probably
gotcha.
Get
so that'd
more
be the
involved.
Sign.
Yeah. So we'll see. It's something that offense could certainly use right now because you want to see both him, now that we're seeing what Pryor is really capable of as a wide receiver, to see those guys both on the field at the same time to help out whoever is at quarterback.
Yeah, you certainly hope that they can do something there for you. I'll tell you what, when you look at this game, does it feel like a must-win? And I know every game is a must-win, but when you look at this schedule at Tennessee, a team you've beaten the last 2 years, it feels like a must-win to me because going to Cincinnati, even though they're struggling, that seems like a tough game. And then, yes, the Jets are struggling. You get them at home, but you don't want to go into that game at home 0-7, and that's what would happen. You'd be if you lost the next two in a row.
Yeah, I mean, at 0-5, I consider every game after at 0 in this stage when you're the last team without a win to be a must-win because you just have to be there's been so many, I guess, there's been so many moments of progress throughout this season that got kind of halted last week against New England, where there wasn't too many things to pull away from that game
right.
to build off of. At some point, you just want to be reaffirmed in what you're doing by getting a win. And I think that that's what makes this game so important. I don't view it from a must-win perspective in terms of, I think a lot of people are maybe viewing Tennessee as the, like, quote-unquote easiest team left on the schedule, but I don't see it that way. Maybe that's because I have more faith in the Titans than I do most other people. I think the Titans are very in the hunt to win that division.
Yeah.
Because it's a pretty weak division, and the Texans are without J.J. Watt and are not playing at a great offensively with Brock Osweiler, and the Colts are kind of a mess, and the Jaguars really haven't turned the corner. I mean, this is a team, their next three games are against, I think, the Jags, the Colts, and the Browns. I mean, they can make a move in this division. So I don't view it as that must-win because people view it as, like, the last easy team on the schedule. I just view it as a must-win because you're on five.
You got to get one. And, you know, what's your sense? You're down in the locker room a lot. What's your sense of just the state of the guys right now?
I think it's been strong. I think it's as strong as you could possibly hope it for it to be, and I think that's a reflection of the coach. I think that, you know, even though this team got a couple wins early last season, I think there's a difference in kind of the overall feeling. I think it's almost that this team is so young that they don't know any better. They're going to be upbeat by Wednesday. I think they're right. They're good at kind of putting it in the past. And I think that even though this team's kind of started slowly defensively these last couple games, they've been able to kind of punch back after getting punched early in these games. And I think that even happened last week against the Patriots before Kessler got hurt. So I think that there's that mindset that is a reflection of the coaching that's still penetrating that locker room. I think you don't want to say they're upbeat at 0-5, but I think that by when they get to Wednesday of game week, I think they've moved on and kind of view it kind of in isolation as this is the one game that they have to focus on right now.
I think it is the one game they need to focus on, and it's the one game they need to win, quite frankly, for this Browns team to get offside. What's going on at ClevelandBrowns.com, the Browns mobile app, the latest updates you got for everybody?
So Wednesday is always a busy day. A lot of guys talked in the locker room today. We heard from Joe Thomas, Terrell Pryor, Cody Kessler.
Anything strike you?
And Kevin Hogan. I think Kessler, the way he talked today, I think he is pretty confident he's going to be ready by Sunday. He just wants to – I think that he's in some pain. I think it's not as painful as it was on Sunday, and I think there'll still be some pain this coming Sunday, but I think he's a tough enough guy that he wanted to get back in the field last Sunday, so I think it's going to be tough to hold him back this Sunday.
I think it will be as well, but I think he's going to be out there, but you need him out there. Yeah. You need him out there. Do you get the sense that Josh McCown is ready to play?
I think from a mental standpoint, this
clearly,
guy was
yes.
ready to play weeks ago.
He was ready to and play. I don't think he's ever wanted to miss a snap.
Right. I just think in an ideal world, if you asked him, he probably says he will be. But I think in an ideal world, you probably want to wait a little bit just to let this guy recover a little bit more. He's still dealing with you're recovering from a broken bone. I mean, and that's something you want to get healed as fast as well as possible. So when he comes back, he's 100%. There's nothing holding him back. Because it felt like, was it last year he came back for that last Ravens game, he still wasn't.
And then he got fully knocked out.
It seemed like he was never 100% after that Cardinals game last year. So you just want him back because we saw what him and this offense is capable of with him at quarterback, Corey Coleman out there as well, what they were capable of for that first quarter against the Ravens.
We certainly don't want to see him knocked out again. My real question, though, is let's say Kessler starts this weekend. He plays like he has, you know, in the 2.25 games that he's gotten to play. Does he just keep the job the rest of the way?
It's tough. It's because I understand, like, you want to see the growing and developing, but you ultimately at this stage, especially if you're winless, you got to get the guy out there who's going to give you the best chance to win, no matter if the guy's 37 or 23. I mean,
correct.
You got to get someone out there, and that's what's going to make it a tough decision because it's hard to see, unless Kessler gets better and better, the offense with a healthy Josh McCown in that first quarter is the best we've seen it all season. And I don't know if it's reached that level at any point yet. So that's the tough decision that they're going to have to weigh. I think there's a lot of confidence. I think there was measured confidence in Kessler when he first started debuting. It's turned into some genuine confidence. But I think there's always been that genuine confidence in Josh McCown in that locker room. So it's a tough decision. But, you know, I'm looking forward to a decision between two healthy quarterbacks than a decision between two hurt quarterbacks. I think that's a good problem to have at some point. But
I'd like to have that.
Right. I mean, so let's get to that point first before we can even think which direction they're going to go.
Yes, indeed. Follow him on Twitter at @Andrew_Gribble. Sir Andrew Gribble with us here on CBD. We'll be back with our final thoughts right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, so here's the summary of Wednesday in Berea. Four different quarterbacks took reps today. Josh McCown, Cody Kessler, Kevin Hogan, and Terrell Pryor for the first time all season took some of the quarterback work in the media portion of practice. Then you've got no more Joel Bitonio, so we don't know what the offensive line is going to look like. Jonathan Cooper was just signed. Does he come in there? So a lot of turmoil for a team already that's 0-5 headed into what I think is a surprisingly difficult game. I think that this is a very good defense for the Tennessee Titans. They're top 10 in terms of yards allowed per game. They can get to the quarterback with a rock bow. Jarrell Casey, a handful, and an interior line at the three technique. This is not going to be an easy game by any stretch, not to mention the fact that they will come out and physically run. Now, at the end of the day, we've been less susceptible to run than we have the past, but play action, we've been terrible. The good news is Mariota, third worst on play action thus far this year. Maybe that helps the Browns.
Right, and if you recall last year, and I know it was obviously, at that point in the season, you know, different leadership there in Tennessee, but it was, you know, the zone read action with Mariota as a rookie that was really holding our linebackers and allowing him to throw into some holes in zone or finding a guy open in man coverage. So, the one thing that we don't need is Mariota to be confident with his arm. And that's really one of my keys to the game. You've got to stop the run. Okay? That is core of defense in the National Football League. Force a team to be one-dimensional, but then the one thing that I could see happening to us is Mariota beating us with his legs. You know, extending plays, we're already susceptible to play action. We, you know, our eye control, our discipline is bad. We suck up. He drops one right over our head. They get chunk play. They extend drives in third and six plus situations, which, you know, should fall into our hands or falls into a very good defensive's hands. Opportunity to get off the field, get the offense back on, move the chains, get points, flip the field position. Those things are, that's a winning combination of football.
We will get into this Titans team tomorrow. We'll tell you their defensive starters, their offensive starters. We'll let you know everybody that they have got so far on this team, what they're doing. That'll come tomorrow when we really dive into this preview. Plus, we'll hear from head coach Hugh Jackson. His press conference, 3:15, will be live on ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. Don't forget, 7 o'clock tonight, Matt Wilhelm, Ken Carman, the Cleveland Browns preview show.
Oh, thanks for the reminder.
The PNC Bank Cleveland Browns radio network. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. For Matt Fontana, Andrew Gribble, Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.